and welcome on the box. We do TV on this show. It's a podcast about TV. I'm not going to use that same intro I did the last time I was on. But television shows,
yes.
Programs,
yes,
and stuff like that. What you watch isn't in a cinema.
That you watch with your eyes. That's on a small box.
What else do you watch with?
This is a very accusatory introduction.
I know.
How dare you say I watch things in my eyes?
Are we extending the courtroom drama into this, though?
Can we just say that some people watch with their fingers?
He's got a
like
point.
Like the Ten-Eyed Man.
Yes.
That's a very obscure reference there, Owen. The Ten-Eyed Man has no business.
Actually, I think he was just talking about blind people reading, you know, Braille.
Yeah, that's reading Braille, not watching Braille.
Well, technically, it is looking at it through their fingers. In a very technical sense, it is seeing. The look on your face.
Right.
Because he knows I'm right and wrong at the same time.
I was looking at him like the last... Your nephew, who's just visited for the day, took the last cake, and you're like, you little monster.
Either that or used the bathroom right before you needed to use it and didn't open a window.
Yes. One of the two. Anyhow, TV show.
Yes. Hi, I'm Rob.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Owen.
Before we get into this, On the Box is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and we are all volunteers here, so we do need people's support in order to continue doing what we do. So if you can, make a donation using the PayPal button or the GoFundMe campaign, or buy one of our lovely bits of merchandise from our shop. Everything is on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, various things like that. Just look for The Geek Show. Or email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk or info@thegeekshow.co.uk. You can also find all of our shows on Mixcloud, iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, various other places on the internet. So, yeah, that's the blurb done. Let's get into it. So, we have news, I believe.
Do we? Do we really have news?
I believe we do.
Yeah, it's 9 months since I conceived.
You've been brewing for a long time.
No, it's just the weird wording you use to say that. When people usually say, I have news, that's what they mean. And On the Box is not pregnant or getting married. We can assure you of that. There is news in the world, though. Semantics.
Yes.
But, huzzah, maybe.
That was quite of a long...
I'm not following anymore, either.
That was kind of a long segue to get to the news.
Well, you know, sometimes where you are and where the news are very long away, so you need to get on a lot of segues that have wheels and you've got to push forward and get going.
Well, he started off with one of them, but unfortunately he got mugged halfway down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, the
and
news.
And now we're just kind of wandering around the streets at our independence.
Yes.
It's like Pokemon Go.
So anyway, news, yes. Do you want to start off or me?
Sure, I'll start off. So, Fireman Sam.
Yeah.
You know, he goes around, he puts out fires, saves children.
Isn't he apparently the hero next door? Isn't it part of the song, Sam is the hero next door?
I think he's certainly a hero to certain groups.
Which groups would these be?
The kind of people who maybe like a bit too much white in their hooded apparel.
A bit judgmental.
England fans?
A bit judgmental of people that are different to them.
Exactly.
England fans.
Yes.
Conservative party.
No, England fans.
Aren't they both the same thing?
But see, this is the news that Fireman Sam has done a racist.
Oh.
So this was a recent episode found... See, some people calling it an animation error, but I don't think there was anything like accidental about it. That basically there was a bit where some papers went flying and one of the characters stood on them. And the idea was the papers were supposed to be covered in just like random illegible writing. Like you see in this kind of thing. Mm. Only someone took a screen grab and it's not just illegible squiggles. It's a verse from the Quran.
One of the decorative pages, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Ouch.
One of the decorative pages... which is part of a religion who think if the Quran even so much as touches the floor, that's desecration.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then to have someone stamp on it.
This is just a kind of a weird message because people have been, you know, accusing Fireman Sam of being a bit overly PC with its introduction of new characters to sort of tick all the ethnic minority boxes, to be very all-encompassing and very accessible to everybody. And then to do that... That's kind of a weird statement they're sending out.
Yeah, it's basically like Fireman Sam just whipping off his shirt to show like SWAT stickers on his nipples.
Yeah. I would kind of assume that what happened in this case was that an animator thought he was being sneaky and wanted to put something that he actually thought no one would ever see, and it...
Well, I'm not even sure it's the animator. Because apparently back in February of 2012, the creator of the series, Dave Jones, was detained at Gatwick Airport after making comments about a woman in a hijab.
Wow.
If it was the animator, though, there is a history of that. Like, Little Mermaid is littered with rogue penises. So that's a little bit more playful compared to doing something like that.
This isn't so much of a fun Easter egg, is it?
Yeah. No, not
really. Thing is, given the current climate and what's been going on in various other countries, you know...
The Charlie Hebdo thing is
just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, no, yeah, it was just an example.
You know, but given what's been going on in other countries, it's probably not a good time to make this kind of gaffe. We'll give the benefit of the doubt and call it a gaffe.
I think probably ill-advised joke is probably what it is.
Yeah, ill-advised joke.
The worst part is...
What?
So, see, over 1,000 people wrote into the BBC to complain. And you know what? The response was just, they didn't care.
What?
I mean, that could be because Fireman Sam is actually on Channel 5.
I was going to say. So what did Channel 5 have to say?
Just that they're very sorry for it and they're not going to work with that animation studio anymore.
So you queued all of us up for that joke?
I did, yes.
Is it going to be animated by Korean animators now because that's where all the animation in the world comes from?
No. It's going to be like Taiwanese news.
That wasn't a joke, though. Seriously, I wasn't a joke. Simpsons, Family Guy, all that is animated by Korean animation studios.
I know, but that's why I was saying it's going to be Taiwanese news now. You remember what the Taiwanese...
You say that, I've actually got a screenshot from the episode, and it does look exactly like those Taiwanese news reports.
The Taiwanese news was suggested after the vote of Brexit, we went a bit rogue, put rockets under the country, and then flew off into space.
Yep.
Which, as we all know, is exactly what happened.
It was, and I didn't know Taiwan had their papers on us, so I noticed that sort of thing. Sneaky Taiwan.
Some of their news articles related to just world affairs are just... Brilliant.
Are they genuine, though?
Yeah.
Are they really genuine? It seems like they're just having a joke.
Whoever's doing it is in some cases a freaking genius. You know the one with William and Catherine when they got married? And then you got the queen, and she's got a condom, and she puts a pin through it.
Oh, yeah.
And then gives it to William.
That's it. It's Taiwan. They're the ones behind Trump's presidential campaign.
Oh, they're making it so that they've got material for the next decade.
Yes. I think so. Whenever I watch those, like the Taiwanese news animations, it just reminds me of The Sims.
By the end of it, Taiwanese news, if Trump becomes president, Taiwanese news is just going to be, the end of it is just going to be so lazy because they've just got so much material and so much content. Just going to be some guy as if, you know, who's worked out how to use the Nintendo Wii. You just sit there on the couch waving it about a couple of times. It's going to be that level of lazy.
So, yeah, Fireman Sam did a bad.
Yes.
How we connected to that there, I don't know.
Through the happy medium of Taiwanese news.
Yeah.
Talking about happy mediums, Notorious B.I.G., also known as Biggie Smalls, was killed 20 years ago in a drive-by shooting. And obviously that was part of the whole East Coast, West Coast... Tupac being murdered, Biggie being murdered, everything like that. Puff Daddy did a song for Biggie Smalls because it was his friend, everything like that. Now, in surprising news, US cable channel TBS has announced that it is developing a new sitcom based on the lyrics of the Notorious B.I.G. or Biggie Smalls.
So, the verse and the lyrics of Notorious B.I.G. or Biggie Smalls, who was a notorious drug addict, was always in trouble with the crime, and most of his lyrics about how hard it was to grow up in a time which was very, very rife for racial difficulties in the 1990s. Just watch films like, you know, Straight to Compton and the amount of rubbish that these people had to get from the police.
There's also the Biggie film as well.
Funny!
Do you know what I think it is? I think somebody over at TBS is... such a huge fan, massive fan of Everybody Hates Chris.
Yeah, it does have that sort of vibe about it.
You know, so they've decided to do their own version based around Biggie Smalls.
A civil rights comedy of the 1990s based around everybody's favourite rapper.
I'm sorry, but...
and there's a cash union audience.
No, those three words don't go together.
Exactly.
Civil rights comedy.
That's the point. That's basically what it... That's what the material is and what they want it to be. That's basically what you're jamming together.
Exactly.
A civil rights comedy. No...
Can they make Terry Crews play the father? Because I thought that was just...
He was already the father in Everybody Hates Chris, wasn't he?
Yeah, just bringing him back for this, because he was so brilliant in that. I just loved it.
Terry Crews should just be everyone's dad.
Yes.
Happy.
Oh, winner. Terry Crews versus Bryan Cranston. Because
I like Bryan Cranston.
No.
In a straight fight.
No, Bryan Cranston as the dad from Malcolm in the Middle versus Terry Crews as the dad from Everybody Hates Chris.
Yes.
In a dad fight. Not in a straight fight where it's Cranston versus Cruz, just in a dad fight. So it's their characters fighting each other.
That just makes no sense, Rob. At all.
I think Terry Crews would have it. Because as Hal from Malcolm in the Middle, I don't think Cranston would have a chance.
I mean, even if it's not true of his character, Terry Crews is an ex-American football player. He's like 6'5". He's got arms like pythons. Yeah, let's put him against like a normal white suburban dad. That makes perfect sense, Rob. What's wrong with your brain?
That's very true. But then, and Everybody Hates Chris, Cruz playing a father, some guy threatened his son. He goes up to the guy and said, oh, if you hit my son, you're not going to jail. I'm going to jail. It's just like...
What a threat. I understand what he's getting at.
It just produces a baseball bat.
Bryan Cranston
just, like,
wins. After he gives Terry Crews terrible indigestion after he eats him.
Yes.
But the core point of this, you know, the original story, it is weird.
Yeah.
Even, I mean, who are TVS? I've never heard of them ever before.
Well, the only TBS I know isn't the US cable channel.
TVS or TV?
TB, Tango Bravo Sierra. Or the one that I know, Tokyo Broadcasting Station.
Yeah.
It's the only TBS I know.
I don't think this will get off the ground, to be honest. Or it might be one of these things where there's like a pilot. Like, there's a season of pilots they have in America. And decide what's picked and what's not. You know, like Big Bang Theory went through that for years, apparently. This, don't think it'll get past that pilot stage with a concept as sketchy as that.
Yeah, but here's the kicker. The comedy will follow the story of a teenage man trying to make it big while also supporting his girlfriend and child, which doesn't sound like a comedy so far.
No, that...
They go on to say that a certain show has proven that a show based on urban music can be a hit. So this show that they're thinking of is going to be called Think Big. They hope it'll achieve similar success to Empire.
Which is my favourite sitcom.
Yes, we want our own very popular programme with black people in it. That's basically what that statement says.
Yeah. Empire is not a comedy.
No, it's not.
It's
it's a soap opera about sort of the wranglings of record label.
Exactly. And that's the basis for this sitcom.
TBS, idiots. I'm sorry. I'm sorry if you're listening to this, TBS. I know what you are. I watch your sleep, I see what you're listening to. But you are clearly idiots.
Is it, are you sure it's actually not CBS? They just forgot how to spell their own name.
No, it's TBS.
They have a lot of networks there. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me. If someone else can explain this, please do.
I think I've explained it enough.
They're idiots, I know.
About how stupid an idea it is. The civil rights comedy is basically what they're doing. And, you know, a bit of a drug addiction thrown in there, because that's worth a few laughs.
No. It's not just civil rights. It's now civil rights in the music industry. He's a budding musician who wants to make it big while supporting his wife and child.
With a drug addiction.
Don't know if he's got a drug addiction, but...
Hilarious.
Yeah, I remember Requiem for a Dream. Oh, that comedy.
It's hilarious.
That wacky antics.
That film still gives me nightmares.
Munchies. Leaving that to one side, moving on, Andrew.
Yes, we have got... The thing that's probably more for me and Rob is the first trailer for Legion is out.
Oh, yes.
So this is the X-Men spin-off. About a guy called David Haller, who has struggled with mental illness all his life. He's schizophrenic. But he also could be the most powerful mutant in the world.
I think I remember hearing about this.
The basic idea is each one of his personalities has its own power.
Oh, is that the main character from X Factor? Because he has a power similar to that. The series, not the terrible TV show.
Yeah, I think it was in X Factor for a while.
So yeah.
It's basically about that he's a legion in himself because he's got many different personalities, many different powers.
He has very big hair.
That qualifies it all then.
Yeah. But yeah, the trailer for this looks really interesting. What I got from the trailer was that he swapped places with a woman who may or may not be in his reality, or maybe he's hallucinating. Do you know what it reminded me of, right?
Here's a question before you get to that thought, though. Do you think it's an attempt to be an Orphan Black?
No.
Because of the multiple personalities thing?
No. It definitely doesn't seem anything like that.
No, okay. It's not like that.
Okay.
The thing that it reminded me of when I was watching the trailer, remember you were reading the first issue of Moon Knight? And you showed me some of those panels where in one panel it was this and then,
Over in four panels.
Reminds me of that.
That's a great example that people can hear.
The idea is basically Moon Knight, Mark Spector, is in a mental institute. And what you see, when you look at them in the first panel, you see two orderlies from the institute.
Yeah.
But when you look at it through his eyes, he sees two of the dog-headed guards of Anubis.
All right.
Oh.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So reality is different in his head to what reality actually is. And the thing about the trailer was they didn't give away what was real and what wasn't.
No, well, I think that's...
really good.
Yeah, and very much like the point of the series is you're probably not going to know what's going on for a long while.
See, if they'd made the Doctor Strange trailer like this, so you didn't know what was real and what wasn't.
Well, Doctor Strange is just Inception, isn't it?
Yeah.
At this point.
They basically gone Matrix Inception.
Yeah.
But I think the most important point that we have to discuss...
Okay.
Legion is the first TV trailer I've ever seen with a Bollywood dance interlude in the middle of it.
Yes.
Hang about. What?
Yep.
that's just a random Bollywood dance.
I don't think me and Rob have any idea what's going on now.
Is this like the Action Jackson trailer with the Yabba Dabba Doo Man?
A bit.
It's just here's a trailer. It's got a pretty decent progression, and then let's just throw this one thing that makes absolutely zero sense.
Has no relevance whatsoever.
Just a random elderly African American guy going yabba dabba doo.
No.
Basically, that. But if it had more awareness of what it's doing, is weird and strange.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Who was putting this out anyways? Because it's a Marvel property and Marvel have aligned themselves with Netflix or TV.
No, it's not. It's actually FX because Fox own the rights to the X-Men, so it's through them.
Okay. Have there been anything TV-wise from Fox in the Marvel? This is a very confusing timeline.
No, I think this is ownership. Their first superhero-based thing.
Yeah. Hmm, you'll have eyes in that then.
Yeah. Well, they're rolling out the talent because... the guy behind it is Noah Hawley, who did the Fargo TV series.
Oh, that's big expectations for that then.
I'm very excited for it.
I mean, it feels like TV, the movie stuff, people are just kind of getting a bit bored of it, and the TV executives are just kind of pouncing on that sort of fatigue of superhero movies by just throwing out all sorts of great stuff, which doesn't have the sort of the need to just pack in a lot of action to 2 hours. It just really pad out the story and do some interesting stuff. Well, part of superhero TV series now.
Part of the reason for that is the runtime. Often TV series have a much longer runtime than the average movie. So they can go into more detail and go into more depth with regards to situations, characters, that sort of
thing.
They're
generally short a lot. The ones that are like really long are the ones that have a bit more of a negative reception. Like,
not really.
See, I think it's having more to do with budget.
The shorter Netflix. I know there's budget reasons, but the shorter Netflix series and like 10, 12 episode runs have been getting...
Thing is, these
massive
episodes,
amount of plots, but ones which have been like,
these
20
episodes,
episodes
are normally
long.
About 45 to 50 minutes long.
Oh no, but the series like 20 episodes long, people it kind of loses its way a lot consistently. You know?
Well, I think it's hard to like keep that level of writing for like 20 odd episodes.
The Netflix system has pretty much, you know, hit the nail right on the head.
But like what we're saying with the budget is because movies have like this. Billions of budget put into them.
Yeah.
They can't afford to take a risk.
That's true.
So that's why it's always the same, like, quite cookie cutter superhero approach because they can't afford for it not to work out.
The thing about with Netflix as well, I mean, they're still getting the memberships. They're not exactly going to lose memberships by releasing a bad show. They could just say, well, that's one season, don't need to do it.
Yeah, Netflix can definitely afford to try something a bit experimental.
Exactly. It'll only really increase their revenue as more people buy memberships in order to watch this program that they actually want to watch.
I hope the more mainstream avenues that are putting out stuff like this realize that the 20-odd episode series can't really be maintained. And the short, punchy 10-episode, 12-episode series is just the way to go.
Yeah, because that's all you need.
Yeah. It was like about 8 hours. 8 hours, that's pretty solid runtime. Get a lot into that, a good story into that.
The thing is, if you do it as, say, 10 episodes of, say, 3 episodes of each.
How do you mean? I know they're going to be putting, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, the Iron Fist, and all that into the Defenders and have them sort of cross over into another. Is it in a series or a movie that we're doing that as?
I think it's a series.
Yeah. Heroes for Hire, I think, is a series.
Hmm.
And kind of the buddy hero, buddy cop type mold, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Iron Fist TV series on its own is just basically Danny Rand doing Oliver Queen, doing the Arrow TV series first season.
Yeah. Okay.
Only probably better.
Yep.
So that's it then, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's it then.
Right, we're going to take a break there then, and we'll be back in a moment with what we've been watching.
Hello, this is Ryan from the Geek Show Podcast Network. Do you like trees? What about paper? What about words? Yes, words are good. Then you will like Literally Loitering, unavailable on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome back to On The Box. We are now on to what have we been watching.
Okay, so, guys, what have you been watching?
I think we have to start with the sort of the big new TV show of the past week.
Which is me, then.
Yes, which is you. Because it is the big sort of...
Yes.
We talked about it on the box, for a while.
And we waxed nostalgic, and everybody gushed about it and everything like that. And obviously, it must be Robot Wars.
Hmm.
And it's nice to see it back, but... There are a couple of things that I'm not used to it as it is now.
It's only first episode.
It's only first episode, and I'm basically giving it a chance because it's only going to be like 6 episodes long, and maybe they're still finding their feet. Maybe they're still working out how to do things because they are very big shoes to fill, the Robot Wars shoes. They are extremely big shoes to fill. So
it's one of the biggest exports, wasn't it, at the time for the BBC?
It went fully international. Yeah. People all over the world just suddenly got really into this whole fighting robots thing. And the current iteration, Darrow Breen, Angela Scanlon. Angela Scanlon is actually, she's better than I thought she was going to be, but surprisingly, Darrow Breen isn't.
He seems to be the face of sort of technology and science because there's a TV show that's going to happen on Dave about video games.
He's the face of that as well. That's fine.
Oh, no, but
this isn't all about technology. This is about a couple of guys in a garden shed basically putting together a robot from bits that they found on the scrap heap.
I understand that, but he's become sort of the catch-all, the sort of the big net that all of this sort of vaguely interconnected stuff catches.
And that's the thing. That's the problem, because at the end of the day, Craig Charles, when he was doing Robot Wars, he used to wear all these outlandish leather jackets and various things like that.
He basically dressed as Lister, didn't he?
He dressed in the way that Lister would dress, right? Yeah. Darrow Breen is fully, fully smart casual. You know, you're talking like suit.
Question though.
Suit, shirt, no tie.
Have you ever seen him wear anything else?
That's true.
Yes.
Wait. Three Men and a Boy.
Yeah.
But he is a very formal guy, you know.
Yeah, he is a very formal guy, but the thing is, Robot Wars is not a formal show.
No, it really isn't.
So the outfit he's got on, right at the start, you know, it just doesn't quite fit. He looks more like a game show host who's just wandered into the wrong set.
Well, it could have been Jimmy Carr, and that would have really sold that idea.
But the thing is, weirdly enough, I think Jimmy Carr might have actually made a better host than Darrow Breen on just based on one episode, right? Because Jimmy Carr, he might not have the technological nous that Darrow Breen does, but maybe that's not what you want. Because Craig Charles certainly didn't understand half the stuff that was going on with these robots.
I don't know whether he's a particularly intelligent person, but he does a particularly nice job on 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown.
That's what I mean. You know, Darrow Breen is used to dealing with... He's not used to playing the host to...
The casual host.
Well, to people who aren't celebrities.
Yeah.
Right? Jimmy Carr has that kind of experience. Darrow Breen's used to standing on the stage doing his stand-up routine or actually being in a studio with a panel of other comedians or, you know, other celebrities.
But his stand-up routines are quite audience-focused, so I feel like...
They are quite audience-focused.
He does have that experience with interacting with members of the public.
He does have that experience, but the thing is, it's bringing those two bits together and making them work. And where I think the big difference between Darrow Breen and a few other people who are presenters of, say, game shows. So I hate to mention his name, but what's his name? Vernon Kane or whatever it is?
Vernon Kane.
Right. Vernon Kane.
I thought you meant Russell Kane.
No,
I can't take Vernon Kane seriously after Bot Selector. It's just ruined him for me.
You know how I'm on about. Oh. Did Family Fortunes.
Yeah, you did mean that one.
The difference between Darrow Breen and someone like Vernon Kane is that Vernon Kay is used to dealing with people right in his face week in, week out.
Well, that's just the horse. The horse isn't the whole show, is it?
So. The horse isn't the whole show. I'm not saying that the horse is the whole show. It's just the host's job is to put the contestants at ease, to basically make them feel like they belong, that sort of thing. So when the contestants are wearing, you know, weird outlandish outfits or work or overalls of some sort, and then they meet somebody who's wearing a suit, immediately, it's like, you know, the boss of the mechanics yard has turned up.
Like a stockholder.
He's the stockholder and he's inspecting everybody. See, and you can see it in their eyes that there's a couple of them are just kind of backing off a little bit from Darrow Breen.
Yeah.
As if as if they're afraid to step out of line before, otherwise teacher will be mad.
He is a big lad. He does cut an imposing figure. So maybe he's that as well. I don't know. He's like 6'5", 6'6".
Angela Scanlon actually really fits. I know that she's no Philippa Forrester, but that's just nostalgia talking, right? She's got her own charm, she's got her own vivaciousness. She communicates really well with the teams in the actual pits. And my god, the pits! Right, the pits are called the pits because they are the pits. It's the grotty, grimy area where they fix the robots on the fly, stuff like that. It's not meant to be like some surgery in a hospital.
I wouldn't even say that. I mean, it's like backstage at a model's. On the catwalk, you know, and all the lights over the mirrors and that sort of setup.
Yeah,
it looks exactly like that. I've been on a catwalk often, so I obviously know this.
It's
I always thought of it more as being like a convention. Like, you get this like corner in a comic convention where there's just like a table.
Yeah.
We're just going to go and just kind of dump their stuff and try to sort something out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've kind of always had that sort of just general slapdash feel to me.
It is a bit like that, but the thing is, it's not like that anymore because everything's too clean, everything's too slick, everything is just... I don't know how to describe it.
Even the graphics had a sort of grime to it.
Yeah.
Like originally, like rust and grime and sort of workshop.
When it originally started, it was supposed to be like given air of like...
It was supposed to be the guy in his garden shed making a robot and becoming champion with the robot he made in his shed.
But it can be something different though.
It can be something different, but when you try and push it too far down the road of being something more like, say, a sport, right? Or an actual or eventing of some sort. You know, when you try and take it down the road of, yes, you're a professional roboteer now, we're going to sponsor you, you're going to have badges.
It's the rise of the esports, though. It's all interlinked with that.
Yeah, and
it has a vibe of esports about it, which is very...
I don't like that.
Crazy.
I don't like that, and I've spoken to other people who are fans of Robot Wars, and they're getting exactly the same vibe. It has that esports vibe to it. That's exactly what it is. And it just doesn't feel... It's the combat is great. Don't get me wrong. They had a great robot on there called Carbine, who was basically a ripoff of Hypnodisc. Because rather than having the flywheel with the bits on the edge of the flywheel, it was just the thing that span, just this, you know, this arm that span really fast. Carbine you know, wrecking the other robots. Razor made an appearance at some point.
Jonathan
Pierce is still there and still as mad as ever. You know, he is really good with the commentary. And that's the one bit that kind of brings it all together. Jonathan Pierce actually brings it all together during the actual battles. But the battles, they're too quick. They happen too fast. There's no real time in between. After the battle, they talk to the guys, but it's not the host all the time. All the teams are in, like, the same room. So you have...
They weren't before.
No,
they're, like, two separate booths.
So, oh, okay. So that if you were fighting against someone else, you couldn't see what moves they were making by looking over.
Oh, right, like that, yeah. You know. Yeah, I recall that.
But
now
they're all in the same room, and you're like, well, that... Why have you done that? Well, could you not put them on either side and have a little platform in the middle like you used to have before? But then you find out why that may not be the case, because Darrow Breen picks up a piece of a robot called Nuts, which actually broke off because of Carbine, and then flew across the arena and actually hit the bulletproof window of the room he was in, which is like the production room. So it went from the arena floor all the way up. And it was a chunk of metal about 15 centimetres big, a piece of frame, just snapped off and just went...
Yeah.
So it's still quite a dangerous thing, and they've taken safety first with this, which is always a good thing to see. The teams that are involved, they're as mad as ever. Behemoth made a comeback. Behemoth is still there. And I'm waiting to see if any of the other robots are there.
Was British Bulldog there?
Yeah, British Bulldog 3.
Nice.
Oh, Bulldog 3 it was. And Bulldog 3 has actually improved a lot and is heading into Chaos 2 territory in terms of its flipper power. So that's something to look out for.
I hope, like, all these people...
Bulldog Breed.
British Bulldog is a game, isn't it?
If there was people who were doing this, like, hated the fact that World Wars ended and they just still wanted to do it, I just love the idea that it was, like, a backyard Robot Wars League.
There was.
Up and down the country. Oh, was there really?
There were several.
Oh, that's lovely. I like that. Backyard.
there were several, and they weren't just backyard. Some of them actually were, some of them actually just went fully international and actually had sponsorships and all sorts.
I know, I'm just using the backyard wrestling analogy.
No, the backyard wrestling analogy actually works quite well because you had some of the big, big tech companies fielding their own robots in these pitched arena battles against each other. You had like branches of different military from all over the world taking part in Robot Wars-esque tournaments.
Hmm.
And that was one of the things about Robot Wars of old. They actually had that, you know, they had the Army versus the Navy versus the Air Force.
Yeah, but this is only episode one. Yeah. So you kind of got to take it with a pinch of salt because it can
exactly
change.
That's exactly what I'm doing. I mean, change, you know, it is change, and nostalgia goggles are heavy when it comes to Robot Wars with me. So I'm taking a step back, pinch salt, give it some breathing room. I'm not going to make any snap judgments. I'm not fully enjoying the way it is right now, but they may just be finding their feet, you know.
I just can't wait till Chaos 3 shows up with a flipper so strong it can throw opponents into space.
Yes.
What I was going to say was, like when it started, when it was Jeremy Clarkson and Craig Charles, it kind of gave it the idea that...
That's the thing, right? Darrow Breen reminds me of Clarkson from the first season.
Yeah. Huh. He's like, when it started, they gave the impression that the outside world had been destroyed, right? It was a post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah, they didn't do anything like that.
No.
It was just a straight-up... Hey, I'm your presenter, Darrow Breen.
Yeah, they made it all sort of now very clinical, very kind of factual. Yeah. They gave
esports. Yeah. It's the esports vibe.
They gave us the weight of the arena, which I don't think anyone really needs to know.
No.
And they kind of shattered that illusion that it was guys in their back shed by telling the fact that some of the robots were worth £25,000, which kind of shattered that whole spanner and a hammer.
That didn't really shatter the illusion, because there are people who, for their passion, they will spend thousands and thousands of pounds.
Oh, true.
You know, and it's still just a guy in a shed.
But it's still like the vital statistics part of sports. Like, yeah, made their debut, this is how much they weigh, this is the style, this is how old they are.
Yeah.
How's that?
And it... you know, that's why I'm willing to give it a chance. Jonathan Pierce is one of the main reasons I'm willing to give it a chance.
He was brilliant.
Anyway, moving on.
That's Robert was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on. Who's next?
Okay bye, Owen.
See ya. Right, well, I'm going to talk about a show that I wanted to talk about for a while now. Sky's Billions.
Billions?
Yes. It's a TV show starring the ever-strong Damian Lewis.
This wouldn't happen to involve a lot of money, would it?
What would give you that impression?
And Paul Giamatti. Paul Giamatti's in it as well. Don't forget him.
Ooh,
he's
Paul
amazing.
Giamatti.
Oh, yeah, he kind of plays Damian Lewis's nemesis, or arch-rival.
I thought you were going to go with Stepdad.
That would have been interesting. So, Damian Lewis playing Bobby Axelrod,
Bobby what?
Bobby Axelrod.
Okay.
I am not kidding, that is his name.
Who comes up with these names?
Did he invent the Axelrod?
His nickname's Axe, for people call him Axe, but yeah, it is Axelrod. He's
built
the...
an empire on the strength of his firm shaft.
Oh dear.
Empire just took on a whole new meaning. Anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, he's the head of a hedge fund responsible of investing other people's money and making as much from their investments as they can. Then you got Paul Giamatti, who plays Charles Rhodes, otherwise known as Chuck, who is a district attorney who hates Bobby Axelrod and wants and sees him as a sort of a crooked investor who deals illegally and should be stopped at all costs. And as you know, his opinion on Axelrod has nothing to do with the fact that his wife also works for Bobby Axelrod as well. Nothing to do with it whatsoever. But it's one of those shows where you're not quite sure who you want to root for. The possibly crooked hedge fund manager who started from absolutely nothing, you know, grew up in difficult neighborhoods, poor family, and sort of reached the top right from the ground.
Yeah.
Or the district attorney, whose father is also a hedge fund manager, basically grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth and goes around how he hates crooked hedge fund managers and crooked bankers. So you don't know who you want to support. The guy who should be doing good, but he's clearly a bit of a hypocrite. Or the guy that should be bad, but is more relatable. It's quite a good show because you kind of see sort of their both characters sort of digression into kind of
regression.
Well, I'm trying to think of the right word because they both start quite at the top of the game, but they kind of sort of digress into
regress.
Well
not some of the because they're not going
backwards,
back, are they?
Yeah,
it's like downfall.
I suppose.
Downfall.
That's a better way of saying it. Yeah, and it just kind of shows how they feel for each other. It is actually kind of ruining their lives. So Chuck decided to recuse himself from the actual case because he didn't want to be seen as biased, although he still makes sure that he knows what's happening. So he's not being involved, but he's being involved. So that kind of shows he's not a holier-than-thou character. But Axelrod, you want to believe he's a good guy. He's not... He doesn't deal in illegal trades, but then he kind of bribes officers, pays people off. So you kind of think, well, maybe he's kind of the bad guy they were saying he is. So you don't know who you want to root for, but you just want to go for Damian Lewis because he's just a great guy, great character.
But, I mean, the character, but the other one's Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti's amazing. Even if he's the most evil, if he played Hitler, I'd still be okay.
Let's spot the guy that played Hitler.
Even when he was at the Rhino in Amazing Spider-Man 2 with the worst Russian accent ever, wanted him to win.
Because he's Paul Giamatti.
That's a fair point. Although he's also quite heavily into bondage as well. The opening scene is him being dominated by, who later turned to be his wife and gets peed on by her, which is literally the opening scene of the series.
It's Paul Giamatti. I'm cool with that.
I won't judge him for his preferences. I'm an open-minded guy.
Okay. It's just for what it was. It wasn't what I was expecting. There's a guy on the floor, handcuffed, with a ball gag in his mouth, being peed on by a woman. It's like, all right, so this is a show about investments and hedge fund managers. And
so
that's how you open
it. It's based on real life, then?
It's every chance.
No, I used to work in investments.
Fair point.
Trust me.
Work hard, play hard, I think, is the adage that those people go by.
But then when you find out that Onoway is a district attorney, okay, fair enough. He's also quite, he's quite unforgiving when, even when a friend of his dad, who, let's say, was an investment banker, was arrested for insider trading, killed himself because of the, because he was going to prison, kind of shows his character's sort of unforgiving nature, which makes him quite strong and makes him a very good, rival for Damian Lewis. I think it's a really good show and I'm looking forward to the second season.
Cool.
Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, if you haven't watched it yet, definitely watch it.
What's that on, Billions?
That's on, it's either Sky One or Sky Atlantic.
Ah, so it's a Sky program.
Yep.
Pesky Sky.
I think it's Sky Atlantic.
Yeah.
I just think, I remember seeing the advert thinking, ooh, that looks quite good. And then being disappointed that I couldn't watch it. Because Virgin.
Oh, Virgin.
So finishing the show off, we
Oh, you're not doing one.
No, I'm not doing one.
Okay, okay. So I've been watching The Living and the Dead on BBC One.
Ooh, I've heard about this.
It's another one of their period dramas that they've kind of found their niche with now. This one's set in the 1890s in Somerset. A psychologist called Nathan Appleby goes back home to see his ailing mother, only for her to die, and he has to inherit the farm, you know, try and run that. But then things get spooky, because he finds that there's ghosts and whatnot, and he's got to be all, oh, those are ghosts, don't like those.
It's a ghost.
It's Antonio setting up for the show.
Got to use my psychology powers. So, it starts off, there's a young girl on the farm who believes she's been possessed by the spirit of kind of a serial killer type guy. Whereas Nathan's all, no, I believe in psychology. You're just a bit mental, love. I'll fix you well and good.
I was like, sorry, love, but...
And so he kind of tries to help her, only to realise that she's got, like, a weird compulsion to be baptised. And so eventually just relents and says, you know, let's have her baptised, maybe. It'll help her resolve her problems. Only for, as she's being dunked in the water, him to suddenly see, like, a man's face reflected in the water and then disappear. But then she's all better, so that's fine.
That's all good.
Okay.
But it's not fine, because there's even more ghosts. There's altogether too many ghosts.
These pesky ghosts.
So it's about him, kind of, what he sees as psychological problems, but could be actual ghosts. And as he's trying to go through and solve all of those, he himself also starts seeing ghosts. Like,
there's a lot of ghosts, you are right.
So many ghosts. Like, he hears the voice of his dead son. Lots of kind of crying baby sounds. Because crying baby sounds are quite scary.
Apparently so.
That and creaking chairs are the things that you use.
Indeed. But then, at the end of the first episode, the whole thing gets turned on its head. Because he actually sees a ghost. Only what he sees is a woman wearing a red coat with, like, an iPad in her hand.
Oh, that's curious.
Yeah, so, I'm only kind of 3 episodes in, 6-episode series, but it seems like you can kind of see the future a bit.
Yeah.
Like, in another episode, he sees what he describes as just 2 flashing lights, but it's obviously meant to be, like, a car coming towards him and then vanishing.
Very intriguing prospect, that.
Oh. It is, it's an... See, I like that it's playing its cards very close to its chest. Like, I have no idea what's going on, and that's helped create a genuinely quite spooky atmosphere.
Does it have the cliffhangers as well? It sounds like it does. Like, it's forever leaving you at a cliff edge, wanting to know how this progresses and the mystery unfolds. And...
Yeah, I think it's been pretty good at, like, because each episode will have its own sort of self-contained plot, which will end, and then they'll throw in, like, a bit of a cliffhanger. Like, episode 3 was, like, the best one, because you just see him dancing around, and then you see just a little boy dressed all in black, holding kind of a toy ship. The toy ship that belonged to his son who drowned, and the boy's just kind of, like, dripping wet.
Oh, that is kind of spooky.
That is quite spooky.
Is this a BBC show, this?
Yeah, it's BBC. Yeah.
Huh.
I thought I knew I'd seen it advertised somewhere, but this is, like, a... good time for sort of period TV.
Yeah, I think they've been really cracking them out.
Away from the shackles of Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
We're doing some, like, the one which was about Dickens, I can't remember what it was called.
Oh, Dickensian.
Should have really knew that, but...
Yeah, not that hard of a name.
But there's loads of stuff which is doing different takes on Dickens. No, not Dickens, sort of the period drama.
Yeah.
The period, yeah. All sorts.
So is BBC now doing stuff right?
They are. They've been upping their game.
They've been doing stuff right on and off for a while. Yeah.
They just can't seem to get their hosts for shows bang on.
Well, you think it's a great channel, and then you realise they're doing the one show, and then you think, nope, they're not a good channel. Move on.
And they thought Chris Evans could do a car show.
It's okay, because they can.
It's just
like
not
this.
that car show.
Not true.
I think it's nice to have a horror show that's actually got that genuine sense of fear and dread. Like stuff like American Horror Story, I love it. But it's that very kind of gaudy, quite tacky sense of horror.
Well, they did have Lady Gaga as one of their main characters.
Exactly. It's basically
campy, gory, American.
It's a 1920s carnival horror. That's what it is. You know, covered in glitter and.
What, the one that Living in the Dead or Horror Story?
Hey, American Horror Story.
Yeah. Because that was one of the series, wasn't it? The Freak Show.
Yeah, the Freak Show thing. It's the 1920s, cover it in glitter, you know, cover it in glitter and sequins, give it a nice perm and, you know, wheel it out for the audience.
That's basically Lady Gaga's career as well.
So that's basically how I see American Horror Story.
And American Horror Story is full of meaty chunks of people, just like Lady Gaga.
There's a... With horror fans, there's a growing belief that the best stuff which has been doing for horror is actually on TV. You know, the movie stuff, no, people are really falling out with that. But TV is doing some really interesting and challenging stuff, and that sounds like it's added to it.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think it goes horror back. Movies now, I think, again, it's a budgetary thing. But the opposite problem is that they get too much of a budget. And like, okay, we don't actually know what we do with all this money.
Yeah.
Quick, let's have the scary monster jump out and yell booga booga booga.
Weren't the best horrors sort of low budget ones? The ones that actually did a lot more for the money they had. I don't know, I didn't really watch a lot of old horrors, but I kind of...
Well, I mean, horror's never been really a series that needs a massive budget.
No.
Because it requires more just an atmosphere.
Well, yeah.
Like The Living and the Dead, they have this great thing they do. Like sometimes you'll see the ghost... And it's kind of hard to, it's like a cinematography thing. Well, you'll have the shot and you kind of have a space in the shot where, you know, that's where they should be standing.
Yeah.
And then the ghost will be kind of just a bit farther away than that.
Mm.
And it creates this quite unsettling effect.
Yeah. Modern horror seem to cater more to jump scares rather than creating an actual overall atmosphere for the whole film.
It sounds a lot like, maybe not stylistically because I'm not seeing what it looks like, but Crimson Peak, it seems like it has that sort of, a vibe to it as far as the ghosts go.
I mean, from what I've seen, it's that same kind of very dark, badly lit 19th century type room.
Gothic romance to sort of usually put all that sort of stuff under. That sounds really interesting. I might check that out.
And like, there's one bit with like, there's a ghost woman and you just see her just standing in the background for like quite a while with just no one remarking on her. Like, that gave me the bejeebies.
Did they see her? Are they okay with that? Why are they doing that? That sounds really good, that. You know? And it's digestible, you know what I mean? American Horror Story might be very good, but there's a lot of it.
There is. You have to sit down for a big sitting.
But this, like, British shows are just generally a lot shorter, like 6-8 episodes tops.
Yeah, well, this is just 6 hours spooky stuff happens.
Yeah.
Also maybe some stuff about like fear of progress.
Sounds really, really good, that, actually. Yeah. Excellent.
Is that everything?
I think that's everything.
Okay.
But can we have another awkward silence? We haven't had enough of them yet.
Well, I've only one thing to say to that, and that's...
But yeah, that's the end of the show. On
okay,
the box.
Cool.
Show over. Host bots power down. That was quite easy for Rob to do.
Not got a lot of power then.
He's been doing that all day, so...
That's it for another week. We'll see you all next week. I've been Rob.
I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Owen.
We'll see you all next week. Take care, have fun.
And thanks for listening.